This is Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio Channel 869.
iStar 2 is die grootste volhoubaarheidsinisiatief in Suid-Afrika.
What's that?
Welcome to the studio, Samkelo.
Whatever. iStar 2 is the greatest sustainability through arts movement in the country.
That's what I said.
We're looking for young South Africans to enter the iStar 2 competition. Go to www.istar2.com and please enter your art.
That's www.istar2.com.
Pierre, now you can also say you've been in an ad with a real celebrity.
iStar 2, hosted by Pierre Dutoit, is proudly brought to you by Radio Today. iStar 2, sustainability through art.
Good afternoon, listeners, and it's a warm welcome from the Radio Today studios to the iStar 2 show. Unfortunately, Kitu is traveling in Africa. I think she's in Algeria today. And Kitu, if you hear us, hello, I hope you're well on that side. And then I have, as she is known in Parliament, the little green queen in the studio. She is beautiful. She's feisty. I watched her perform or talk at the Climate Reality Show at the Climate Reality Project with Al Gore. A lady committed to making a difference in South Africa. Welcome to the studio, Lorraine Jenks.
Thank you, Pierre.
Good to have you here.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
And I was so impressed with your energy and you motivated so many people at the conference.
It's
did
anger.
You enjoy it?
It's anger. You've waited 40 years. I've waited for things to change and they don't change.
Yeah.
So that's why I stood up, and I said the environmentalists need what Gandhi ended up doing, what Nelson Mandela ended up doing, what Martin Luther King ended up doing. We need our own anti-apartheid. I actually said Umkhonto Sizwe, but that was too much on the violence side. We need some civil disobedience because things are not changing fast enough.
Okay, so you fully believe people are not doing what we need to
do. They're not.
But before we get there, can you tell me a little bit about who you are? Who is this feisty woman that's sitting
here? This feisty woman is actually a very shy little poppy from Pretoria. Actually, Pretoria girls are a little ballet dancer who hardly spoke until she was about 17 or 18, with probably an overdeveloped sense of compassion and always a champion of the underdog. And found myself in London doing my gap year, which turned into 11 years. And from there ended up in California, right in 1969 I started my journey. 1969, 1970, so you can work my age out. And that was the hippie era.
So you're actually a hippie.
Absolutely. This has to impress you and make me think I'm serious when I wear black. And you know, we all had jobs, but we lived in communes and we lived a very green lifestyle. The hippies were very green and we wore natural fabrics, no synthetics. We grew our own veggies. We were watching about deforestation. We watched the overfishing. We had the first hints of pollution in Los Angeles. And we grew herbs, very organic herbs, which we inhaled joyously, a lot of. Came home eventually. I had to tell my children that. Well, you have to tell your kids, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, came home after nearly 12 years, in fact, and did a Montessori course. I'm actually a Montessori teacher. And then ended up...
Can you just explain that? Yeah,
so Montessori is a wonderful alternate form of education. Yeah. There's a whole program on that. I think it's a solution for Africa. Mm-hmm. Because you learn by doing things, by seeing, hearing, touching, feeling, tasting. You do mathematics with color and moving beads around. They have a thing called Atkinder. I think that's the solution for Africa, where after standard 7, you get put on a farm and you get taught to work with your hands. You get taught husbandry, farming, carpentry, plumbing, because your hormones are rampant. Mm. And then once you've used up all that energy, you come back into mainstream and you do tertiary education. Brilliant. I'll tell you more We can do a whole thing on that.
Is that when you started following the Buddhist lifestyle?
No. I'm a traveler. Mm-hmm. I've been down the Amazon in a canoe. Mm. Have they got stuff just like Bantu beer? Yes, that delicious white sort of crunchy stuff.
Mm. You also went to Tibet.
I couldn't walk straight. I went to Tibet overland before the train. It was not a holiday. It was an arduous journey. And that changed my life, to see the humbleness of those people and the modesty. And they smile. The rural Tibetan smiles all the time. He has such inner peace because his whole philosophy is the alleviation of suffering, of yourself first, and then of all sentient beings. And they don't want helicopters, they don't want electricity, they don't want the stuff we aspire to, and they have a perfectly sustainable lifestyle.
Did you walk up to the mountaintop and
found the enlightened man there, and you
asked him the big question?
No, I've met the Dalai Lama, what a wonderful man, answered some questions for us.
Wow.
But I think, the Chinese it's just an absolute disgrace what's happening in Tibet, and we better watch out here. In case it doesn't start happening here as well. But we did it in a little bus, and we were watched by the military from leaving Kathmandu right until we got to Lhasa. So it was a hard trip, and we broke down, and there is nothing to help you fixing. There's no aspirin, no Coca-Cola, no shops. People live off the land and with their herds of yak. But it was really a most amazing experience. I would be almost frightened to go back now, because I think it's probably worse.
How did that influence your view of the world?
It made me far less materialistic.
Mm-hmm.
It made me realize that the only way we're ever going to get on is just to live for the moment. You know, you can't drag the past with you, and the future hasn't even happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you live for now. And just to see the simplicity of how incredibly simple life can be. Not that we all want to live like that, but that should be our basic philosophy. And, you know, you see the sort of classic stories where they won't build something, and if they're digging a foundation, they'll actually save the earthworms before they put the cement in, you know, that sort of thing. And they also have a wonderful thing called a sky burial. That's how I want to be buried, but I think where they chop you up and they put you on the top of the mountain and the vultures eat you.
Yeah.
So you go...
That's alternative.
Yeah, and they have special monks who do that. But, so, you know, to see the immolations, I don't know how to pronounce it, of the monks who are actually setting themselves on fire to try and make a statement, and the whole world is just ignoring them, hundreds of them, and the world just ignores them because China is controlling what we say.
And if you look at your horizon, what is your dream, or what is your vision? What do you want to achieve one day when you stand back and look back?
I just want people to stop and think. I want them to stop and think before they buy something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everything, absolutely everything you use every day, everything you buy, sit on, drive, eat, sleep on, play with, has an impact on the environment. So you need to understand the big picture, stand right back and be objective, and look at the whole life cycle of absolutely everything. Where it comes from, who it impacted on when it was sourced, how far it traveled, how it's produced, how it impacts through its whole cycle, how it's transported, what it does to the environment and human beings and animals while it's being used, and then most importantly of all, where it ends up, because you own it. If you buy that mouse on the table here, you own that mouse. The bin isn't the end of its life, it's the beginning of the rest of its life. So just stand back and think about that. And I think if people understood, and they would just be a little bit more responsible, because people don't actually know. Until you're as old as I am and you've actually seen the depletion of resources, and, you know, going down the Amazon and seeing those incredible, completely unspoilt tribes just being walked over by the oil companies. And I've just been up to Ghana. And I did a wonderful train trip from Vic Falls up to Dar es Salaam, 11 days and 12 nights. It was absolutely amazing. A new train, very inexpensive and just magic, to see what the big agricultural companies are doing to Africa. I mean, they're raping Africa. They're just walking in, and people like Bill Gates and Bono doing good everywhere. You see clinics going up, little schools going up. It's all an agenda for them to move in. They're working through the women with the Maasai. They're working with the wives, and telling them people are going to starve because the cattle won't have fodder. but slowly moving in their seeds, which are patented. So once these people start buying those seeds, they're locked into a contract with that company. And it's not about the seeds. It's not about the promises that they will that they're drought resistant or pest resistant. It's about selling the chemicals that you need to grow those seeds, selling the herbicides and the pesticides. And, you know, there was a fantastic event yesterday. It was an international food revolution. It was called by John and his son, Ocean Robbins, with up-to-date statistics. And, for example, in India, Africa's got to wake up. Africa's fast asleep. In India, this is very controversial. He was saying 100,000. I've heard from 20,000 to 100,000 farmers have committed suicide. You won't read that in the newspapers, because they were locked into contracts on the promise that the cotton that they planted would be pest-resistant, drought-resistant, and it wasn't. The crops failed. And in India, if you kill yourself, your family isn't liable for your debts. 100,000 people. And the people that sell those products own the news these days. You know, there's so few news agencies. There used to be 48. Now there are about 6. So Google it. Google suicides in India, and you'll see. And it's going to happen here. You know, The way there's enough food for everybody, it's just politics and economics that's preventing it from getting to the right people.
But you say we need to wake up to stuff. What do you think we need to wake up to in South Africa?
We must stop the governments from signing up with Monsanto, DuPont, Bayer, Syngenta, Pioneer. I can't think of the others because my brain freezes when I'm in front of this microphone.
But you believe those are the biggest challenges we face
absolutely.
In South Africa?
Absolutely. Yeah? They're taking over. You know, if you control food, you control the world. And that's their sole aim. Mm. And, you know, I don't know, most people, when I give a talk, I talk to everybody now, but I started talking to people in hospitality and restaurant owners. I ask for a show of hands who really understands genetically modified. People think it's a hybrid. It's not taking a red rose and a white rose and creating a pink rose. It's actually inserting a foreign gene into a seed. It's like taking a bacterium or a fungus and forcing that into the genetic code of a seed, supposedly to make it resistant to Roundup. Roundup is actually Agent Orange, which kills weeds, flat-leafed weeds. And, you know, Monsanto had to withdraw one of their ads on the radio a couple of weeks ago because they couldn't substantiate one single claim in that advertisement. Mm. It's failing. And what people don't know, when I ask for a show of hands, is that 80% of our corn, our maize, our mealies in South Africa, is genetically modified. We were never told. We were never asked if it was okay. People fear that it is bad for your health. It's proven to be bad for your health, but the minute a laboratory does research and proves that, Monsanto buys them out, or those researchers get blacklisted. People are afraid that it's unhealthy to eat. You cannot get genetically modified foods labeled in America. There are battles going on. Vermont's a little bit there. Washington's trying, because the big companies, these huge big companies, have billions of dollars to fight labeling. So surely if you're proud of what you've created, you would want it on the label. But, you know, I actually don't care what you eat. It's your choice. I care about the destruction of biodiversity. The bees are dying out. And what's happened is what's supposed to kill the weeds has actually created a superweed. So what they have to do now is create an even more toxic pesticide to spray on the crops to fight this new superweed. And, of course, all this stuff is getting into the rivers, is getting into the air. They're finding it in the blood of babies, in women's breast milk. It's got to stop. That has absolutely got to stop. And we must all farm everywhere. If you go through France, every second little house in the suburbs has got a garden with veggies in it. There's actually one here in Blegari. I was thrilled to bits. The whole pavement's full of vegetables. And there's a sign that says, help yourself. Please don't take more than you need. Now, if we all did that, hey?
We're going to break for some music.
Yes.
Because I'd like to find out from you what you think we need.
Yeah, that's very sad. We must think about some happy things.
I want to find out from you, after the song you've chosen, what we need to ask of our politicians.
Okay.
Before we go to vote this week. But your favorite song is Whiter Shade of Pale.
Yeah.
Why that one?
I used to have a little red Triumph Spitfire. And I used to drive from Earls Court, we all lived in Earls Court, up to Kew, where I worked for Dodge Brothers. And they used to play this on the radio every single morning when I was driving to work. Happy days.
And we're listening to Proco Harum.
Yes.
Great. Song by Proco Harum, White Shade of Pale. And we are talking to a lovely lady, Lorraine Jenks, ex-hippie. Yeah, we just had a little chat about the good old days. Lorraine, what do you think we as citizens in South Africa need to look for when we look at politicians and what all these promises we get? From a sustainability perspective, what do we need to ask them, or what do we need to ask ourselves before we go and cast our vote this week?
That's a very difficult one. I think we've got to stop looking at profit. Obviously, we've got to stop looking at corruption. I think that will happen eventually. It's just it's like getting divorced. You go a bit mad. When you're on your own again, you go out with everybody, and you eat too much, and you drink too much, and you drive too fast. But then the next generation moves in that are a bit more...
So you have hope
stable.
In the
Oh, of course.
So
that's why I came home. That's why
yeah.
I think Africa's got a destiny. We've got such a future here. You know, in the States, there's nothing left to do. That's why the kids are on drugs. Everybody's car, two TVs, you know, holiday home. having done this trip through Africa recently, I think what we have to start looking at is doing things the African way. There's the most wonderful saying that I actually saw in the airplane. It says, until the lion finds its voice, Africa will be defined by the hunter. So until Africa says, this is who I am, respect it, take it or leave it, the rest of the Western world is going to see them, us the way they want to see us, not the way we actually should be. So I think we have to go back to African traditions of ways of doing things. Somebody should make it really fashionable to have a mud house with a thatch roof. If you drive on the train through East Africa, you go through these tiny little villages. Every single little compound, if it's a family or a small village, has a big hole next to the house where they've made their own bricks. And some of them got a tin roof, which I think the government helps them with, or it's thatched. We would solve our housing problem immediately, but it needs to be made fashionable. In the Southwest, in America, it's highly fashionable to have an adobe home. So rather than this having to have bricks and mortar and this Western ethic, there are other ways of doing things. I think even simple things like waste management. South Africans are bloody lazy. We are not going to separate. I don't even do it at my home because I'm not sure where it all goes. And I did an exercise when I worked for the Southern Sun Hotel Group, implementing recycling in hotels for the Earth Summit. Big panic after we built the Sandton Convention Center. It was impossible to train people quickly enough to separate. And all we did was some young boy arrived in my office, didn't even know who he was. He said, I've got a bucky, let me do it for you. We did a quick audit of 10 hotels, and he said, let's just separate the wet and dry. He was way ahead of his time. They're doing that now. And we just picked up the dry every day. Dude, it's a whole industry in India where you get the dry gets picked up and taken away as quickly as possible so it doesn't get contaminated. Take it to the townships where people haven't got work. Let them pick out polystyrene, plastic, glass, cans, and sell it and make money. So it's job creation, and it's solving the waste problem. And then all the wet waste, you compost, either at home or you send it off to be composted elsewhere and turned into something useful. I think recycling is a hoax. I like to be controversial. I love being my age because you can be controversial. I think it's a load of rubbish. I think it's making us feel better psychologically. I take this PET bottle and I say to myself, oh, this is going to be recycled. Less than 20% gets recycled. South Africa's a bit ahead of the game, I must say. But, you know, to say that part of it's plant-based, that's the corn that's being grown by Monsanto for bioplastic, for bio oil, and for animal feed instead of for food for human beings. You know, we eat too much meat. So what it does is you think that bottle is being turned into good. It's not. It's turned into a T-shirt or a bag or furniture. It's still plastic. And what it does, it gives the oil companies permission to carry on making more virgin plastic. Because if you look at the graph for recycling and the manufacturing of plastic, the manufacturing of new plastic shoots right up, and recycling is a little flat growth at the bottom of the graph. So I think there should be no plastic at all. There was no plastic when I was a little girl. The milk bottles were washed over and over and over again. The Coke bottles were washed over and over again. It's more job creation, collecting it, having little centers everywhere to wash it. So I'm against plastic recycling. I've even got a problem with Jane Goodall, and I'm embarrassed to say that. I mean, that woman is just such an icon. She's so amazing, the work she does. But they're fundraising at the moment to protect elephants and rhino, and they're selling plastic flip-flops, for goodness sake, with her signature on.
And you took it up with them?
I took it up with them. And the fellow that's making them was so cross with me because he spent a fortune on the machinery to make the flip-flops. He's actually hadn't thought about it, and he's taken it upon himself to implement a recycling program. But people don't think. You know, you send all these things up into the rural areas. They're going to end up in the rivers. They're going to end up in the sea. 50,000 flip-flops are picked up in a few days on a beach in Australia. And the flip-flops from Malaysia ended up on the beach in Kenya, for goodness sake. So they've got a big thing of turning flip-flops into sculptures, but it's still plastic.
So you're definitely not scared to speak your mind.
Oh,
and,
I love it.
Our listeners can also get hold of you because you're a professional speaker and you get invited.
I didn't know you could get paid to speak because I'm a teacher. Teachers to speak. So now I get paid, which is fantastic. I do lots for nothing, which I shouldn't, but I want to get my message out.
Yeah.
But I also want to tell you about my
house.
Where
can they get hold of you?
On my website, which is Hotel Stuff, and the other one's called Green Stuff.
Yeah.
Or just info@hotelstuff.co.za.
Okay, and you're also on Facebook, and people can...
I'm on Facebook. I've got three Facebook pages, and I don't know what to do, because my Lorraine Jenks one was supposed to be just for me, but it's actually, I've become like my own brand, which is a bit embarrassing. But people won't go off it, because I tried to create a Green Stuff Facebook page and a hotel, and they ignore those. They keep staying on my Lorraine Jenks one.
Lorraine, if you had to ask people out there to start doing something differently, what would that be?
I would simply say, think before you buy. You know, I worked for Southern Sun for 15 years and tried to get them to think green. I was in the purchasing department, which I still can't believe I did. And I was just ahead of my time. No one was being delinquent at all. But I actually left eventually. That's when I started my little Green Stuff business. And then the hotel started calling me back, which was quite funny. And they'd say, what were you saying for all those 15 years? And I would tell them, and I'd look around the table in the boardroom, and usually the food and beverage man was going, yeah, I'm worried about my organic veggies and my fair trade food and my coffee and my, you know, organic. And the maintenance man would be listening to everything I said, worried about his energy and his water and his waste management, and the rest would be rolling their eyes. And I remembered our CEO saying to me, hoteliers are people. And in a moment of absolute complete madness, my little team, three housewives and me, decided to build a whole green hotel at the Hostex show. Dekkerix heard what we were saying. We built a whole greenhouse at Dekkerix. We win awards retrospectively to this day, three awards last year, because those were ahead of themselves. And I managed to prove that I could furnish an entire home from the front door, every single thing, your paint, your carpet, your furnishing, your appliances, your cleaning chemicals, your food and beverage, right through to the back to your worm farm and your composter and your natural pool, with a greener version of everything. And it was such fun. So I want to do that again one day. We did it out of housekeeping. And the greenies are the most incredible people. The first project, everyone just muddles in. People arrived with stepladders and paintbrushes and helped us set the first one up. And then the second three were actually sponsored. So it's really easy. If you just know how, and what I try to do when I do my talks is I have to say why. Until you've explained why we have to do this, nobody's going to change. I have some horror stories, because it's like giving up smoking. You've got to do a bit of the horror. And then I explain what we need to do, and then they leave knowing how to do it and where to find what they need to do it. And it's so easy once you know.
And if you can complete the following sentence, I start to...
really like Pierre, because his heart's in the right place, and he's committed, and he is so sincere. And look at that smile.
You are so kind.
And you're on the right path, and we're with you 100% with your project. I'll help you wherever we can.
Thank you so much for joining me in the studio.
You're
a beautiful lady.
Thank you.
I love your passion and your energy and your wisdom.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And
we're
going to end off with Hotel California, if there's time. Thank you, Ndamankulu. Listeners, have a good week. We'll see you next week. Cheers. Thank you very much. There she stood in the doorway with the mission bell. I was thinking to myself, this could be heaven or this could be hell. Did she lift up the candle? Did she show me the way? There were voices down the corridor. Thought I heard them say, welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely place, such a lovely face. There's many a room at the Hotel California. iStar 2 is die grootste volhoubaarheidsinisiatief in Suid-Afrika.
What's that?
Welcome to the studio, Samkelo.
Whatever. iStar 2 is the greatest sustainability through arts movement in the country.
That's what I said.
We're looking for young South Africans to enter the iStar 2 competition. Go to www.istar2.com and please enter your art.
That's www.istar2.com.
Pierre, now you can also say you've been in an ad with a real celebrity.
iStart 2, hosted by Pierre Dutoit, was proudly brought to you by Radio Today. Remember to tune in at the same time next week. iStart 2, sustainability through art.